This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're staying on the surface of the planet Earth to award commercial space contracts for the future. From Amazon, the great monster of retail, and Bob Zimmerman is here to help us understand why these contracts, why now, and what are the unknowns. Bob, a very good evening to you. Commercial space now replacing all big space, all government sovereign programs. Amazon has an interest in commercial space through its founder, Jeff Bezos, who has retired from Amazon but is now Lord and Master of Blue Origin. But these contracts are not all for Blue Origin. So explain, please, the thinking behind these contracts. Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, Amazon, when Bezos was there, initiated a project it calls the Kuiper. Project Kuiper. And Project Kuiper is to put up a constellation of about 3,000 plus satellites to provide internet communications to the world. It's just like Starlink. It's similar to OneWeb's constellations. The idea was the same. And so Jeff Bezos got Amazon going to do this. Now, being Jeff Bezos and the way his space companies operate, they work very slowly. And so while SpaceX announced its Starlink problem after Kuiper, it's already got like 2,000 plus satellites in orbit, is operational in some parts of the world. Kuiper is years from launching still. However, when they launch, they're going to have to launch a lot of rockets to get these satellites into orbit. And so this week, Amazon announced a very large series of launch contracts with three different companies to launch these satellites. It announced, according to the press release, I'll quote from my own webpage, ULA won 38 launches using its new Vulcan Centaur rocket, not yet flown. Ariane Space won 18 launches using its new Ariane 6 rocket, not yet flown. And Blue Origin, Bezos' company, won 12 launches using its new Glenn rocket, not yet flown, with an option for 15 more launches. Amazon had already a contract with ULA to launch the first 9 times on an Atlas V rocket to put the first satellites into orbit. So basically, this contract is going to, it's probably the largest launch contract announcement ever. For the number of launches, we're talking about, 38, 50, like almost 70 plus launches here. But it's all with unproven rockets. Every single one of these is unproven, not as flown. And so this means that Amazon should recognize that they're almost certainly going to face launch delays and some launch failures in the early stages of this launch contract. I mean, that's not a criticism of the companies. When you get a new rocket, it's not going to work every single time. It's very rare that that a rocket works almost always reliably from the beginning. Very rare. There's some examples of that. The Atlas V might be one, but it's just not. You have to be prepared for failures, and you're going to have to be prepared for delays. And of course, we know the delays are almost systemic to these rockets because the Vulcan Centaur, the new Glenn, and the Ariane 6 are all delayed. They're at least 2 years behind schedule. And the possibility of any of them getting their first launch off this year, though two of them say they will, I think is unlikely. Ariane 6 might get off this year, most likely to get off this year, but even that is questionable right now. And so Amazon is making a commitment to launch its satellite on rockets that aren't proven. And the commercial aspect of this is that means their constellation is going to become commercially viable later. And that means they are going to be coming in after companies like Starlink and OneWeb are already well established and have a customer base. It means it's going to be harder for them to get new customers because others will have captured that market.
Bob, a detail. Vulcan Centaur, New Glenn, Ariane 6, these three rockets. Are any of them reusing their initial boosters the way SpaceX does?
All right, the Vulcan Centaur is the Vulcan is the first stage, and Centaur is the upper stage. That's what they've done. That it's no longer just Vulcan. No, they're not. They're, you know, ULA mentioned in the beginning that it was going to try to detach the engines during a launch and recover them, but there's no sign at all that they're doing engineering work to do that. So that's a completely disposable rocket. Ariane 6 is completely disposable. It's had problems up to now getting customers because its cost is high.
Right.
In this case, it's very clear that Amazon, for political reasons, private enterprise political reasons, has avoided SpaceX, their direct competitor. And so they have to go with more expensive rockets like the Ariane 6. Blue Origin's New Glenn is supposed to have its first stage reusable, just like SpaceX, coming down vertical landing on a barge. But, you know, once again, it's 2 to 3 years behind schedule, and it hasn't launched yet. And same as SpaceX, the first time they try to do this, you should be prepared for things not to work. So, yeah, that's the story with those answering questions.
We move from the commercial space world to the big space world, which has turned into geopolitics, and bitterly. Rogozin is the head of Roscosmos. He is now putting out announcements using Twitter, Bob. Is that how officials big space works these days?
That's how Rogozin has worked to a great extent the last few years, actually. And it's not the only way he does it, but he, like Elon Musk. Musk makes a lot of announcements over Twitter, and so does Rogozin. And I won't criticize him for that. But what he has done is he had said about 3 weeks ago that if the sanctions against Russia, because of its invasion of the Ukraine, were not lifted, he was going to make some significant changes to his international partnerships relating to ISS. Basically, he was threatening to break off the partnership. And at the time, I predicted several things that would happen. I'm going to make the same prediction. So anyway, April has now come, and so he has tweeted a vague statement that they're going to end cooperation with ISS, and he's in the process now of negotiating with the space agencies of the U.S., Canada, the EU, and Japan in connection with that. And so, of course, this is not simple. You can't just simply say goodbye. They have their assets there, and they want to continue to use their own assets on ISS. So I'm predicting the same thing I predicted before, pretty much. No more barter flights. This is a negotiation with NASA whereby Russian non-Russian astronauts would fly on each other's capsules. This way, Russians would get to fly in Dragon or Starliner and learn how it works, and Americans and Europeans and Japanese would fly on Soyuz, once again, to see how it works, and that's smart. It's a one-to-one barter where you pay no money. Well, that negotiation is over. I'm sure that's what he's going to do. He hasn't said so, but I'm sure that's what's going to happen. There will be no more mutual research on the station. That's my prediction. They do some mutual research, for example, some American scientists, rather than go through NASA's very difficult draconian bureaucracy to get science research on ISS, they go to the Russians, which is much simpler, or have been for many years. That'll end. And any research on the station will probably now be separated. They won't do partnerships on research. And I think Gosden's going to eventually announce that they are leaving the station as of 24. They're not going to extend their partnership, which was pretty much what the story was. They hadn't yet said whether they'd go beyond 24, and I think that's what's going to happen. They have some modules they're building and have been for decades that they're supposed to add to ISS. They will either add those modules and do some additional engineering upgrades so that after 24, they could separate their half from ISS. That's a possibility. The other possibility, if that possibility occurs, that gives us, both them and us, a couple of years to make some engineering plans to deal with the station break being separated into two halves. There are things that have to be done. Russia's going to need more power access on its own half because it depends on the American half for power mostly. And we would have to deal with keeping the station in orbit because right now we've generally depended on progress radars to adjust the orbit upward periodically. Whether they will put those modules on ISS and then separate away, though, is not known. There's another interview that Rogozin did with the Chinese state press this week in which he proposed that Russia launch modules to China's Tiangong station being assembled in orbit right now. That would, the possibility then is that the modules that are on the ground that are being built could be adapted and attached to the Chinese station. Now, China hasn't agreed to that, and whether they agree or not is actually besides the point. The real question is whether Russia even has the capability to do it. Russia has real problems, and I'm not sure they can even get these modules up to ISS, and getting them attached to China's station is going to require some major engineering discussions, because neither the Tiangong station or the modules were designed for exactly this.
Right.
So that's the story. I don't know where we'll go from here, but I do know that the partnership with Russia is ending, John.
And the end of the partnership is an end of an era that will be looked back upon as either naive or utopian, the cooperation of Roscosmos and NASA. We move to JAXA, that's the Japanese Space Agency, and apparently becoming an astronaut is a focus of thousands.
Oh, yeah, this is routine. All right, so what happened is the Japanese Space Agency, JAXA, made an announcement that they were going to do a new recruitment for astronauts to go to ISS. This would be the first time they've done it in 13 years. They don't fly very many astronauts to ISS, so they don't need very many. So they, after 13 years, they announced they were going to do this. And when they did, more than 4,000 people applied. And they had also loosened the requirements. They had dropped the requirement that your candidates have a university education, and that was on the hope that they would recruit people with a wider range of experience. It's not a surprise, you know, like when the UAE announced it was taking applications for astronauts, they also got thousands of applications in a much smaller country. So this is not a surprise. The thing about Japan that's kind of disappointing is that this very successful capitalist nation that really focuses on innovative, successful private enterprise, it does not have any private companies doing anything like this. Nothing. So their citizens they only have two choices. Either they can hire a private company like SpaceX to put them in space, pay money for that private company, but it's a foreign company, or they have to depend on the government to give them approval to go into space.
A detail, Bob, here. This is about astronauts to the ISS, but from what you just explained, there's no guarantee ISS will be fully functioning anytime soon.
That's exactly right. However, there are private American stations under construction right now, and those are going to launch in the next sometime around 24, 25, 26. And Americans will very gladly take money from JAXA to launch their JAXA's astronauts to our commercial stations, and JAXA will do so. So there will be a place for these people to go.
More innovation. This is commercial space innovation. UAE, which is a leader of all kinds of conversations having to do with peace and war and development, is looking to develop private space. Private space for the UAE, does that mean it's not subsidized? They're just making home for to entertain private enterprise?
This is a tough one. The UAE, as you know, its government has been aggressively trying to encourage private enterprise in the space field now for almost a decade. And one of the hallmarks of that effort was their Al Amal Mars orbiter, which is personally in orbit around Mars and TED doing real science. But, you know, they don't have much of a space industry and they need to get it started. So, like, for example, Al Amal was almost entirely built by American universities. With UAE citizens being brought in to be educated while this happened. And it was launched by Japan. So there's not a lot of UAE actual involvement was in building that. The UAE's people, though, now are running the satellite. So the UAE wants to bring in more, wants to get its own private space industry going. So there was a recent story in their state-run press that announced they're really focusing on trying to encourage private enterprise. So you ask if this is subsidized, and I would say it is subsidized, but they're trying to do it in a contractual manner, which is not subsidization. It's kind of a fine point, but there is a difference. So they have allocated funds to build things space related, and they're going to actually award contracts to private companies. companies to do this. That's their basic plan right now. And they're hoping as these companies develop, they will become less reliant on government funding. That's their plan. And so whether this can happen in the UAE's culture is an interesting question, but they are definitely into private enterprise and making money. So we have a hope here, and that's their plan right now.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring next to the surface of the moon. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.